This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NFL betting guide is already out, and our college football guide is coming out in just a couple of weeks. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and NFL seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. So sign up before the end of July, it's running out, and receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of just $175. Or sign up for a monthly subscription, get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to help up your betting game. This offer does end on July 31st, so don't miss out on those preseason deals. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. A man who does yeoman's work, certainly when it comes to college football and beyond, is Amal Shaw to my right. Amal, I do want to talk some NFL with you, my friend, and I want to discuss a team that I've already got some numbers on in the futures market, and that would be the Seattle Seahawks. So you could have gotten, once the numbers came out, about over almost 5-1 to win the division, which
wow.
is
it's a good number.
Plus 425 is what I ended up landing on. Now those numbers are long gone. So now you look at them, and if you there's a bunch of different ways to miss the playoffs for this team is even money, which is interesting to me because I look at the conference as a whole and I go, well, how do they miss the playoffs? Who's better than we expect? And how do the Seahawks come back to the pack? Remember, their defense was kind of the issue last year.
Right.
And yet, they had a lead at the end of the third quarter in San Francisco in the wild card game. Then the fourth quarter, everything went haywire, and San Francisco even ended up covering the number that day. What is the more likely outcome? Is this team really a challenger to San Francisco to win the division? Or could they be maybe come back to the pack a little bit? Because last year, this time when we're talking, we thought they might be one of the worst teams in the entire league, and they were anything but.
Yeah, I'm not a believer in the Seattle Seahawks, so probably a biased opinion coming in here on the Hawks. But this is a team that went 9-8 last year, Dave. They get into the postseason. But remember, this is a team that beat the Rams and the Cardinals four times yep. in those matchups. The 44% of your wins came against two teams that were completely in disarray. So, again, like I said, I don't understand the affinity for this team. I think their receiving core is going to be one of the top receiving cores in the NFL when you look at it. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and then, of course, the rookie Jaxon Smith-Njigba in the slot, who I think is going to be really tough to stop. Their defense is going to be improved, but in terms of winning this division, I just don't see it. San Francisco, to me, is still, from an offensive standpoint and defensive standpoint, one of the top and most talented teams in the NFL, despite the question marks at quarterback. You take away that, the other 21 players, they've got the best roster in football, and it's not even close.
I'm with you on that. Look at again, this is a 9-win team a year ago. I don't think anybody saw 9 wins coming this time last year. Russell Wilson, of course, just exited stage left. You didn't even know who the quarterback was going to be, whether it was going to be Geno Smith or Drew Locke. That was a conversation yeah. this time last year. Then Geno has, who saw that year yeah. coming from Geno, literally off the scrap heap of the NFL. Now he gets paid, right? Is there any concern that Geno reverts back to Jets Geno, or can we now confidently say, no, all that time of suffering has done him well, and now this last year is the truer sense of who Geno Smith actually is?
Yeah, to your point, his career quarterback rating elevated incredibly when he got to Seattle. 94.2, but in a very small sample size, just mm-hmm. in 5 pass attempts in 2020, and then in 21, 103 rating, and then last year, 30 touchdowns, 11 INTs, 100.9. So did a tremendous job with 4,200 yards passing. Look, with the receiving core he has, I think it'll be tough to regress. He is in a great position. I don't know, Dave, how many receiving cores you would take over this one. I mean, this thing is elite.
It really does. And again, we know, I think the angst that people have when they look at Pete Carroll with his teams, they go, well, Pete's going to run the ball.
Well, I love their running back room.
Right? Like their offense on paper, if the offensive line holds up,
yeah.
they should be able to score some points. So there's a lot of props out there associated with Geno. And certainly when you look at passing yards for a guy like Geno Smith this year, 3,900 in a hook. That over, minus -5, the under, minus -115. Passing touchdowns, 26.5. Basically even juice, minus -10 either way. Interceptions, 11.5. If you want to play the over, this is interesting. Plus $1.05 for over 11.5 picks. Now, you just mentioned it. That receiving core is really good, which means to me, you would think they'd have a lot of volume and opportunity for picks because Geno's going to want to get it to that talented wide receiving core.
No question about it. But you know what? I'm not concerned about him from a pick standpoint because I think he's not a guy that takes risky throws. He's pretty conservative in terms of his approach, so I think that's why you could see that number being a little bit lower in terms of where he's at. I mentioned last year 30-11, sitting at 11.5 for the season in terms of INTs over. But I don't know. I just like with Metcalf, who's a tremendous talent. Mm-hmm. Tyler Lockett, very underappreciated and underrated. I don't know what it is up in Seattle. Dougie Baldwin was also underrated. I'm telling you, Dave, to me, the offensive rookie of the year is going to be one of two players. Jackson Smith and Jigba of Seattle or Bryce Young of the Carolina Panthers.
Wow. You like Jackson Smith that much?
I don't think there's going to be anybody that can cover him. He is such a great slot receiver and what he can do coming off the line. I read one scout said, he said, there's nobody that has the ability to get open with their quickness and their route running as well as he does in terms of what he's going to be doing.
Well, I want to look at the number on Jackson Smith and Jigba to be the rookie of the year because he's going to have that opportunity, right? So there's no question about it when you look in that futures market here for rookie of the year. And I think you're right on that. He right now, he's got a really good chance to do just that. I guess the question is if that means we believe in Geno Smith. We believe that this is the new Geno. 11 picks from a year ago, he's not going to revert.
Objection, counselor.
Bring it.
Because here's the thing. When you're throwing in the slot, you're throwing 6, 7, 8, 9 yard dump off plays. I mean, this is a guy that can do things run after the catch. I know we've got some statistics. I don't know if we have them in front of us or not. But in terms of Jackson Smith and Jigba catches. Mm-hmm. And if you're like me and if you think he's got a shot at offensive rookie of the year, it's a pretty good bet in terms of going over on his total.
And 15-1 to win the offensive Roy. Okay. So if you tell me.
For a DK US, Jackson Smith, the Jigba for receptions, mm-hmm. sitting at 57.5.
Okay. And again, 15-1 to win the offensive rookie of the year. So there's your catch total. If he's, in your estimation of all, a guy that's really going to be a matchup nightmare because of the other guys, could he evolve into their number one by the end of the year? I mean, look, that's pretty heady when you look at DK Metcalf and you look at Lockett and you look at the guys that they already have that are already ahead of him, but it feels like he's going to get the target shares to Wyatt's point of that total maybe hitting the over and for rookie of the year at 15-1 because you think the target share will be there.
I absolutely do. You know, when you think about guys in that particular position where he's going to be, he's going to have an opportunity. You're talking about what, 3.5 catches per game?
Mm-hmm.
I think his total yardage is about 700. To me, he's in a great position. I'm just surprised the number is as high as it is at 15-1. Can somebody please explain to me why Bijan Robinson is plus 275?
Well, because I think they feel like three down back in the ATL, he's going to be the guy that Arthur Smith just loads up the offense on. You mentioned why Jackson Smith and Jigba could be a good play because the other guys around it actually will make him more unguardable because they can't go get him. So 15-1 feels like it could be live because he's going to have a lot of single coverage with the other guys. The pure volume that Bijan, we anticipate him getting in the ATL is the reason why I think he's plus 275.
Well, first of all, here's the problem. Desmond Ridder is going to throw him a few bounce passes. Second, I just think that Jahmyr Gibbs is the guy who could be dangerous in this one. But to me, you got to look for guys who are going to be able to put up some stats. Who are guys that you think that could potentially put up some stats? I'll give you a name. I don't play fantasy football, but I don't think he's going to be an offensive rookie of the year kind of guy. But a guy with tremendous, tremendous speed that people may not have been aware of coming out of college if they didn't watch Texas A&M, Devin Achane.
Yeah.
This kid can flat out fly. We'll see how effective he is in terms of running the football with the Miami Dolphins, but I think he'll have some opportunities. I like what he can do. This is intriguing. I'll tell you one thing. We know Jordan Addison is fast in a car. I don't know if he's necessarily as fast on the football field. He didn't have that elite speed at USC or Pittsburgh.
17-1 for Jordan Addison in Minnesota if he can stay on the field here and not get tickets up and down.
For people that are unaware, he was going 140 miles an hour.
Where are you going?
In a 55.
Just slow it down, Jordan. You're young. We've seen, God forbid, we've seen mistakes made in cars by young athletes all the time. Not a good way to go. Very quickly, before we end this segment, Pete Carroll's 71 years young. 25-1 to win Coach of the Year. is Pete Carroll in? Could he possibly, if they won this division, that's the context it would have to take in order for him to be in this conversation?
It would, but I think based on the success last year, it becomes harder for him. To me, you know, I'm not a big fan of this betting market, the coach of the year odds. Mm-hmm. It's such a crapshoot. Here's what I don't get. Dan Campbell's plus 850. That team is expected to have a good year
right. And
potentially win the division. I do like Sean Payton at 9-1, even though it's a little bit short, if you believe Denver's going to be good. I just don't think the Broncos are going to be particularly good. If Atlanta's good with Arthur Smith, there's another one. I'm looking for a team that's a non-playoff qualifier that's got an opportunity to potentially make the postseason.
I'm telling you, man, Pete Carroll should have won it last year.
That's exactly.
When the expectations were zero, and he made them all the way into a 9-win team that got to the postseason, 25-1 to get that award this year. Okay, when we come back, Wes Reynolds, let's talk all things British Open next here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSIN Pro subscriber today. Get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You're going to get unlimited access to our VSIN.com/picks page. Sort those picks out by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSIN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, ROI, and see which VSIN expert has the current hot hand. So for VSIN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSIN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for just $19 at VSIN.com/subscribe. Back alongside Amal Shaw, Dave Ross here. We will get back to the NFL in just a little bit, but because, I mean, you're here, we got to talk college football. By the way, is excitement the wrong word to choose for you as you get ready for the beginning? Like, what's the word that best describes your outlook to the upcoming college football season?
Two words, the great Bart Scott quote. Can't wait.
You love it. You absolutely
wait.
Love it.
Absolutely.
I love your enthusiasm when it comes to college football. Let's go to the SEC.
Yep.
Because I guess it is still regarded as the best conference in all of college football. I'm sure other Big Ten people might take umbrage, but it feels like it's still SEC and then everybody else.
For about the last 2.5 decades.
That's the way it's been.
Yeah.
Now, to win that final game in Atlanta in that SEC championship game, mm-hmm. Georgia, still the faves at -$1.15 to get that done. I don't want to keep calling this the Nick Saban revenge tour, uh-huh. but at 3-1, you know this is sticking in his craw just a little bit, that all of a sudden it's not Bama that we're talking about year in and year out, that it is Georgia that feels like now has that top spot. And then you get to the LSUs at +450, and then we see the drop-off, right? 14-1 to get to the Tennessees. Before we talk about the big three, is there anybody that could surprise from the double-digit odds or beyond that have a realistic pathway to get to Georgia?
Let's eliminate the SEC East. There's nobody else there. There's Georgia's schedule combined with the ineptitude of everybody else in the East. Think about this. On Georgia's schedule, the highest season win total of any team is Tennessee at 7.5.
Oof.
So that tells you all you need to know about the current situation in terms of who they're facing. And for me, when I look at it, Georgia, even though they've got to replace their quarterback in terms of Stetson Bennett, I think it's going to be a real challenge for this team. They won't be challenged at all. I just think they're going to be prohibitive favorites in every game that they play. They should get to Atlanta, no problem. On the other side, Alabama. Obviously, there's a ton of affinity for LSU. I think LSU should be a good team. And what helps LSU is they get the early test against Florida State in Orlando to open the season on Sunday, Labor mm-hmm. Day weekend. But that game, even if they lose, doesn't even really hurt them. It does in terms of a playoff standpoint, because then your margin for error diminishes greatly. But in terms of the SEC West, doesn't matter. So I would still take Alabama at 3-1. I think they're the best bet on the board. We really don't know what Georgia's offense, even though they got a very good receiving core. Alabama is decent in terms of the offensive line, pretty good depth at the running back position. Wide receivers probably a little bit shakier than they've been in years past. And then the big question mark, Dave, comes in at the quarterback position. That's the question. Who's going to get the start here? Tyler Buchner? Is it going to be Ty Simpson? And then, of course, the guy that I like, Jalen Milroe. Milroe didn't play particularly well against A&M. But I'm going to tell you what, this guy can run. And when the play breaks down, and in college football, having a mobile quarterback is invaluable.
Totally agree. And I look at this, and again, you mentioned Bama being the best bet to win it today at 3-1 value play. When I look at LSU at +450, I look at family and what Brian Kelly was able to do in year one, and I kind of marvel. And I go, I'm sure you saw some of this coming. I don't know that the general public did. What do you make of year two now with Brian Kelly? And are we to the point of calling Baton Rouge the third head in the three-headed tiger? That would be Georgia, Bama. Can we include LSU in that running?
Yeah, great question. I would say let's wait until 2024.
Okay.
I think 2022 and 23 are going to be great years for LSU. They've got an opportunity this year to really go 10-2. They've got a couple of difficult spots on the schedule. November 4th, off of a bye, they go to Tuscaloosa. That could be the determining factor as to which team winds up in Atlanta from the SEC West. They've got an early game I mentioned against Florida State Sunday, September 3rd. Also, they go to Stark Vegas on the 16th. The Razorbacks come calling down to Baton Rouge. I'm telling you, with KJ Jefferson back under center, it'll be a challenge. It's not going to be a push-up or a layup against this team that Sam Pittman coaches. He does a nice job. Mm-hmm. The rest of the schedule is very manageable. Gators are always a tough game. They just seem to play LSU tough. Auburn, this game at home, LSU should be able to control. I'm not really concerned about A&M. We could be in a situation where they're looking at firing Jimbo Fisher. I think the buyout at that point is $73 million.
Wow.
I think LSU is a very, very good team. If the game were in Baton Rouge this year, I'd give them a much better chance to win the SEC West. But because they have to go to Tuscaloosa, give the edge to the Crimson Tide.
Very quickly, before we go to some other teams in the SEC, that first week, mm-hmm. and I know how much you and I were talking about it a year ago, that Florida State game in week one. What about this year now against Florida State? Because it feels like everybody down there in Tallahassee is really excited about what a Florida State, because it could be an early tripping point before they ever get into conference play.
Well, it could for both sides, but I love Florida State in this matchup. They're about a 1 or 2 point dog. Mm-hmm. I just don't see it. I think Jordan Travis at 14-1 is the best Heisman bet on the board. Caleb Williams is the prohibitive favorite at 4.5, 5-1, and rightfully so. But to me, Travis is the best dual threat out there. Caleb Williams is a mobile quarterback. He doesn't run the way Travis does, but don't get me wrong. He can run the football, and he is the best quarterback in college football. But this team, when you look at them, I like the depth. I like the talent that the Seminoles have. So this is going to be a real challenge here for LSU. It will not be a layup by any stretch. And remember, last year it was in the Superdome in New Orleans. This year you're in Orlando.
All right, that's going to be a wild one before they even get to SEC play. All right, Tennessee had a dream season going until the quarterback got his leg blown up and Hendon Hooker and was a shortlist for Heisman Trophy. What about now with Josh Heupel? What do the Vols look like with that up-tempo offense this year? Are they out of the surprise category because of what they did last year?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's high expectations this year for the Tennessee Volunteers. The other thing is keep in mind, you think about the players that they lost from last year. You lose the kind of talent that they lost, all of a sudden it changed the dynamic of how you look at Tennessee. That's one of the things I think that can't be overstated. They lose Darnell Wright at left tackle. He did a tremendous job. You lose Hendon Hooker. You lose Jalen Hyatt. Mm. All guys that had tremendous impacts on this offense. You lose tackle, quarterback, wide receiver. It's going to be hard to overcome. Look, they have some good players on the outside. Brew McCoy, if the name sounds familiar.
Yeah.
He's the old USC transfer. Squirrel White, we know, can scoot. He's just a sophomore. Should have an even better year. Bazooka Joe, because he probably has the strongest arm in college football, Joe Milton.
And look great in the bowl game.
Yeah, absolutely. But accuracy at times is a little bit of a problem. It can be a bit erratic. Running game is decent. I really like Jabari Small. He's right there with Jalen Wright in terms of their starting tailback. This team is pretty good. Defensively, where they're at will remain to be seen in terms of how effective they are. Remember, they gave up 63 points to that Spencer Rattler and South Carolina team.
Yeah, the defense was challenged, let's put it that way, last year down there for Tennessee Nation. Okay, they are 14-1, Tennessee, to win the SEC. The same number for Jimbo Fisher and A&M. And I know there's no way you're playing that when you're talking about maybe Jimbo doesn't even make it through the end of the season. What's going on down there at College Station? And do you really look at A&M and say, this could be it if Jimbo can't figure this thing out?
Well, first of all, you've got to address the elephant in the room. The expectations at Texas A&M are just straight up delusional.
Ooh.
Okay? I mean, you don't sit there and take Kansas football and sit there and say, hey, we should be winning national titles. The reality is, yes, A&M is in a great, great location to recruit, state of Texas and near Houston. That's obviously something that's a huge benefit. But this team is just a pretty good team in the best division in college football, in the SEC West, in the best conference in college football, and they're not close to these teams. Right now, when you look at the quarterback situation, whether it's going to be Connor Wegman, Max Johnson, the LSU transfer, Marcel Reed, a big-time recruit for them, I don't know who's going to be the consistent starter for this team. You got to replace Devin Achane at the tailback position. There's some questions here. They've recruited extremely well. Evan Stewart is a big-time receiver. Let's see if he makes a jump up. He's a five-star recruit that's had big expectations. Aeneas Smith, same thing. So we'll see when you look at this team. Defensively, they're usually pretty solid. I expect to be the same thing here. Shamar Turner should have a big year for this team on the defensive side of the ball. But you look at the schedule. You got to go to Rocky Top. Mm-hmm. That's a cross-conference game. You've got to go to LSU. You do host Alabama and Arkansas in back-to-back weeks. But overall, I think this team, and they got to go to Miami as well. So this team, if the season breaks well, I think they're 9-3. Realistically, probably about a 7-5 team.
Wow. And see, that's the thing. So what's the number of wins that Jimbo has to had in order to keep his job? And then two, does he want to keep his job? Is he looking for the backdoor exit of like, man, you've already paid me. Go ahead, buy me out, boosters. Go ahead, and I'll take my wares back to Ford or somewhere else.
Yeah, you know, I think that's an interesting point you bring up. I don't know if he'll get an opportunity in another big program if he gets fired here, because that would be two programs he's been fired at. But the reality of it is, I think he's a guy that right now really has got to get to 9 wins, maybe 10 wins. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that. You've got to beat Bama at home. You've got to get the Miami win just to get the season rolling. I'm going to tell you, Dave, if they lose that game against Miami, you're going to start to hear the issues come about with this team.
Remember this time last year was Jimbo and Saban, they were sniping at each other. Feels like that conversation has been muted, and now we're wondering if Jimbo can keep his job. Okay, when we come back, let's talk a little bit more college football, maybe some other teams in the SEC. If we don't think they can win the conference, obviously some other ways to attack them. Come on back, Sharp Money here on Visa.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NFL betting guide is already out. Our college football guide is coming out in just a couple weeks. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and NFL seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every single team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. So sign up before the end of July. Receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of just $175. Or sign up for a monthly subscription. Get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to help up your betting game. This offer does end on July 31st, so don't miss out on these preseason deals. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Alongside Amal Shaw, Dave Ross rolling on this edition of Sharp Money. You said Bart Scott can't wait for college football. Yep. Even week zero, like, are you just like, let's just kick it off, boys?
No, week zero, you just watch because it's football.
Right.
But, I mean,
that's a month. We're a month away.
Well, the week zero schedule is so bad. I mean, they just need to stop with this. It really is.
So who pointed it out to us? Caleb Williams, the reigning Heisman defender and, you know, the favorite to win is going to be on the Pac-12 network that no one gets.
Yeah, what a bad way to showcase your best player in the game right now.
Navy, Notre Dame, UTEP, Jacksonville State, Ohio, San Diego State, UMass, NMSU, Hawaii, Vanderbilt, and San Jose State, USC on the Pac-12 network at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. That's great. They're going to get their one game.
Navy Notre Dame, that would be the one game that's going to intrigue me on week zero. Just because, you know, you look at Navy, the way they run their offense, right, and the way it's historically Notre Dame should roll.
Yeah.
But could that be somewhat intriguing for a half?
It could be for a little while, but I still think that the Naval Academy right now is kind of in a rebuild mode, and Notre Dame, they should have a pretty good season, so they're in a pretty good spot here in this game in Dublin, Ireland.
Let's get back to the SEC. The best conference in all the land. So we kind of went through the heavy hitters, if you will, obviously the Georgia, Alabama's, LSU's, Tennessee's, and the A&M's of the world. And then after you get from those numbers, which was the longest of those good teams, are 14-1 for Tennessee and A&M to get to Georgia and win it. Then we really start going long shots. The Ole Misses, the Auburns, South Kakalakis, Florida's, and beyond. I want to start down there at the Grove at Ole Miss. 45-1 Now, I'm not sure, but I don't believe Eli Manning's walking through that door. What do you make of what Lane's got cooking down there at Ole Miss? Is this a team? We know what style they want to play. Do they have the athletes to run what they want to run?
Yeah, in theory they do, right? You've got Jackson Dart back at quarterback, the USC transfer. Spencer Sanders transfers in from Oklahoma State. Good mobility in case Jackson Dart's not the guy. And then you've got Walker Howard, an LSU transfer there. So they do have some good depth at quarterback. They could be effective here. Zachary Franklin transfers in as well. He's a guy that can be effective for them on the perimeter. Remember, he's a guy that they're going to need to be effective as he comes over. As he transferred from UTSA, was a tremendous receiver for that offense with that team. But the big thing right now is defensively, they're not as good, and the running game is not as good as it's been in years past, Dave, and that's the area where they need to be effective. I think people don't realize they've been able to run the ball effectively with Lane Train, and that's what's keeps some of the success, not just the passing game.
Great point, because I think everybody just goes, Lane Kiffin throws it all over God's green earth. But it's really, that's not the way he likes to run it.
Yeah.
He wants to run fullbacks and fullback dives, if you will. We're running stuff, spreading everybody out, and then kind of running up the gut. Does he have the athletes to do that, or is it really going to be Jackson Dart, and then you kind of hope that the defense holds up?
Yeah, I think this team could be effective offensively. I still think Lane Kiffin's the best play caller in college football. So they're going to be effective from an offensive standpoint. But what do you get out of the defense? We've seen games against Arkansas a couple of years ago. They play well. They just defensively, they don't get it done. Last year, they got a nice stop against Will Levis, but I thought that turnover was more on him than necessarily in the defense. So when the offense is bogged down, can this team deliver offensively? They got to go down to the Plains third week in October. That'll be a tough game. Mid-September, they're in Tuscaloosa. LSU the following week. I mean, you talk about a brutal back-to-back-to-back at Tuscaloosa, home to LSU, home to Arkansas, and then you get a bye and you go on the road at Auburn. The back of the schedule's not bad against A&M. They could win that game at home. At Georgia, they expect them to get blown out, but then UL Monroe and at Mississippi State in the Egg Bowl.
Yeah, it's so fascinating because I think everybody looks at Lane Kiffin's offense. They think gimmick. Yeah. He tries to be physical, and they would like to be able to run the ball and then sets up the passing game that way, but we know they love to go up-tempo. I guess when you go to the Plains, the only thing better than an Alabama loss is an Auburn win. They haven't gotten enough of them in recent years. What do you make of where this program is? Extreme long shot here to win the SEC at 80-1.
Yeah, Hugh Freeze takes over for Brian Harsin. I think he's a tremendous coach. How effective he'll be in year one remains to be seen. Peyton Thorne, the Michigan State transfer, comes in there. I'm not a big fan of his. You've got Robbie Ashford, redshirt sophomore. He's got good mobility, not necessarily the most accurate passer as a backup quarterback on this team. So some concerns there. They've got a ton of transfers in, which comes as really no surprise with what this team is going to do. The question is, can they get these guys to come in and gel? Defensively, Auburn has been solid over the last several years, but again, we'll see where they're at. Not necessarily enamored with the Tigers this year, maybe in about a year or so.
You know, you mentioned Hugh Freeze, and look, he no disrespect to Liberty. I know that neck of the woods pretty well up there. He wanted out, right? He was ready to leave and get to another big job. We know about the checkered past. But where do you put him now? And I know you like Lane Kiffin as the best play caller in college football. Is Hugh Freeze now back in the SEC? Is he kind of going, hey, you guys might have forgotten about me. But when he was in there the first time, it kind of wreaked havoc on some other schools.
Yeah, absolutely right. I think Hugh Freeze, once he gets the players in there that he had at Ole Miss, I think he can be tremendously competitive against Alabama. And that's the one thing you look at. As great as Nick Saban has been, Auburn has competed against Alabama, even when they've had far inferior talent.
Mm-hmm. Let's look at South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And you know that I'm going to bring up a Beamer and look at what they got cooking down there at South Carolina. And I think Shane's done a pretty good job with this football team. Really came on at the end of last year, 90-1, extreme long shots to win it in the SEC this year. What is he doing down there, the culture that maybe he's building at South Kakalaki?
Well, first of all, a couple things. Let's start from a social media standpoint. They do a tremendous job. Shane Beamer's in his early 40s, getting on social media, getting out there and doing a bunch of different things. I mean, it's just fantastic. Also, when you look at this team right now, he brings in Spencer Rattler, a transfer, a guy that was given up on. Remember, Caleb Williams took over for him at Oklahoma. Now you look at him, he's revived his career, and if he has a great year, he's going to go in the first round. So this is a team you got to pay attention to. I like what they've done in terms of kind of revitalizing some guys at the tight end position and other things in the past. You got Rattler, that's a great starting point. Juju McDowell at the tailback position. So this team can be very dangerous offensively. Offensive line should be very solid. Defensively is where the concerns come in. Can they slow down some of these teams that you got to face? Because you have a lot of teams in the SEC that have returning quarterbacks outside of Georgia and outside of Alabama. LSU's got Daniels back, KJ Jefferson back at Arkansas, Jackson Dart back at Ole Miss, Will Rogers back at Mississippi State. So you're looking at these teams right now, you're going to be playing experienced teams. From a talent standpoint, Dave, I'll tell you right now, I know Joe Milton's got the arm. The best quarterback in the Southeastern Conference resides in Columbia, Missouri.
Wow, didn't expect that to come.
No, you didn't, I know.
Very quickly, because we only got a couple minutes to go here. I'll give you three teams at 100-1.
Okay.
Give me the best chance to really upset the apple cart. Florida, Kentucky, or Arkansas at 100-1?
Ooh, God, I was ready to go Kentucky because I love Mark Stoops as a coach. They do have to replace the quarterback. I'm going to go with the Razorbacks even though they're in the tougher division. Now, let me amend that. I'm going to go Kentucky.
Kentucky
because they know what they want to do. They're going to defend. They're going to run the football. And then they're going to beat you a little bit through the air when the opportunities present itself. But I think you're absolutely right in terms of your question. The reason why I was looking towards Arkansas, I love Sam Pittman as a coach. I think he's a tremendous defensive coach. You bring back KJ Jefferson. But Mark Stoops, this guy gets more out of his talent than almost anybody in college football. If you gave Mark Stoops some more talent, I think this team would be much better. Now, Devin Leary comes in, the NC State transfer. We'll see how effective he can be. I'm not a big fan of his, but let's see how effective he can be in this scenario here. And I just think Mark Stoops will play to his strengths.
Yeah, and again, I'm with you on the coaching aspect of it there. It just seems to maximize what he has at Kentucky. Very quickly, Mississippi State. I mean, this is going to be such a tough year with the passing of Mike Leach. Unexpected, obviously. How does that program get over that emotional trauma, if you will, for some of these kids and then play meaningful football in the SEC?
Yeah, I think that'll be a bit of a challenge. But you know what? They've got the backfield back there. Rogers, Mark's the tailback. Those guys are back. Will Rogers, I'm not the biggest fan of, but the style of offense that was implemented with the late Mike Leach was very effective for him. Defensively, this team is pretty solid, and I think that's where they're going to lay their hat. Zach Arnett, remember, was the defensive coordinator, takes over now as the head coach. This defense should be effective. They do lose Forbes, who was an unbelievable pick six at the cornerback position now with the Washington Commanders. But for me, I don't think you can necessarily discount Mississippi State when you go down to Stark Vegas. It'll be a challenge. There won't be any games where they lay down.
Absolutely love it. Mizzou 150-1, and then the ultimate long shot in the SEC. Vandy, smart guys.
1,500-1.
Make it longer. Yeah. When we come back, not my team, not your team, America's team. Let's break down the Cowboys, the guys with the stars in their helmet. That's coming up next right here. Sharp Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We begin our number three of Sharp Money here on VSiN. Dave Ross and Amal Shaw here at South Point Casino and Hotel. Going to the ninth in Wrigley.
Yeah.
4-3 Cubs under, hanging on.
Well, I'll tell you what, they need to get robo umpires in baseball. Why and I were talking during the commercial break. If you're a St. Louis Cardinals fan, St. Louis Cardinals backer or an overbacker, you've absolutely gotten jobbed. It was a 3-0 count. First pitch by Leiter, about 2.5 inches off the plate. Fine. I get it's a 3-0 count. You're going to give them the benefit of the doubt.
But still, it's off the plate.
It wasn't close.
It's ball four.
It was ball four. The fifth pitch in the at bat on a 3-1 pitch, it missed by 6 inches. I mean,
wow!
I didn't know if the umpire was double parked or what, but I mean, the fact that he called that a strike, why? And then the next play, they get a double play. It was absolutely criminal.
Well, here's the deal. And again, I've talked about it a lot over many different platforms. I did not need the pitch clock. I didn't need the fun bags for bases. But now that those things have been implemented, the game's better. You can't do the get off my lawn type thing any longer. If you're a baseball fan, the games are down by 30 minutes of time. And guess what, Amal? I've been kind of hesitant to want to go to robot umps. If they can do it quickly and keep the pace of the game going, which they can, if they can absolutely do this, the game has been better this year. Rob Manfred, say what you want about him. You got to give him his just due for making these changes that old people might have gone, don't do it. It's the fabric of the game. It's the way it's always been done. He switched it up, And look, I still take exception for the extra inning rules. I think those are still lame.
I agree with you completely.
But everything else, I'm cool with. The bags, if we're getting more running, great. And certainly the time and the pace of the game is so much more enjoyable to watch. If you do this now, to your point, that just affected possibly the total and certainly the side today by bad umpiring. There's no other way around it. So I'm with you. If it's going to improve the quality of the game, and for us as gamblers, that experience, so be it.
Well, the game should be 4-4. The Cardinals should have had an at-bat. I think it would have been Nolan Arenado coming to the dish. Wow. I'm sorry, excuse me, Paul Goldschmidt.
Well, one of the guys might be going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, Goldschmidt coming up with the bases loaded and two outs in a tie game, and they absolutely got jobbed on that one.
So, again, I think it's time, baseball, to really start looking at that if you can do it efficiently. Let's go to America's team. And I look at the Cowboys, and if you're a long-suffering Cowboy backer out there, you go, 1995. I wasn't born yet. I mean, there's a lot of people out there in the space that do not remember when the Cowboys won three or four Super Bowls in the early 90s, the last one coming almost now, oh my goodness, 30 years ago. And now you look at this team. This is a 12-win team a year ago. And what I don't understand is, and I see where the juice is, 9.5 for the win total. Mm-hmm. It's juiced to minus $1.65. By the way, I played it at minus $1.40. Now it's getting out of hand for me. What am I missing?
Well, first of all,
how is this team? Why are people betting the under plus money at plus $1.40 for the bottom to fall out of the Jerry Jones, Dak Prescott, Mike McCarthy era?
So, on the off chance the Cowboys don't win double digits, by the way, Dallas in 21 and 22 had the third best record combined in the National Football League. And I don't understand how they just gloss over this team. So, this way, on the off chance that the Cowboys win 9 games, they can be, we were sharp. No, the reality is Dallas, in my opinion, is third best team in the NFC. They're in a division outside of Philadelphia. I still think the Giants are overhyped and overrated. I think Washington's a team you can get because they just simply don't have the quarterback position filled right now. And you look at the rest of the schedule. They have the Jets, won't be an easy one, but nice on road game at the Arizona Cardinals. You got the Patriots at home, at the Chargers on Monday night in week 6, not an easy game. You're at Buffalo at the Dolphins. Again, tough games there, but at the Panthers, depending on where Carolina is at that point in time. I think this team is very dangerous. They get the Lions at home. They're a very good football team, and they've been right there. I mean, you look at the last couple of postseasons. They've been in there. They've had opportunities, just couldn't seal the deal against the Niners.
I'm totally with you. And again, I do think if you can find alternate markets, maybe to get plus money at 10.5 wins, I'd look to that instead of laying the $1.65. Again, I played it when it was much more manageable when these totals first came out a couple months ago. But barring injury, this is a 10-win team. But here's the amazing thing. They had injury to the key position last year. Super Dak Prescott, as I like to call him. When he's super, they don't lose. And they had Cooper Rush come in, and guess what? They were just fine. It's because of somebody nobody ever talks about. That's Dan Quinn. As long as Dan Quinn is manning that defense for me, and you got 11 and Micah Parsons running around, and you got a front that can get after the quarterback, and I think you have a really good, reliable corner now in Diggs. And I know some people take umbrage and think he's not, maybe he's a little bit overhyped. I don't think so at all. I actually think he was better last year without the interceptions that he had 2 years ago and a much more solid corner. You go out and get Stephon Gilmore in the offseason. I look at this defense, my expectations as a Cowboy backer, somebody's played them 2-1 to win this division. Those numbers are gone too. I think they could have a top five defense in the NFL.
I would agree with you. I mean, Dallas, you know, we talk about their offense all the time because the names are recognizable, but you mentioned Diggs in that secondary. Jordan Lewis is solid, and then you bring in Stephon Gilmore as well. Didn't even touch on arguably one of the top three pass rushers in football, Micah Parsons, in terms of what he's able to do. I really like DeMarcus Lawrence on the other side as well. And then you draft Mazi Smith out of Michigan in the first round. I think he's going to be a pretty good player there in between at the nose tackle position. This is a very talented, good football team, 12-5 the last two seasons. Now all of a sudden the expectation is they're going to win 9 games?
Come on. And by the way, I'm so glad that we're sitting here talking about the Cowboy defense for a couple of minutes here in the Sandy Cap of the Cowboys. You mentioned Smith coming out of Michigan. Wyatt, should I be excited? Because I'm looking for somebody that's going to free up those rush lanes for the Tank Lawrences and the Micah Parsons. Is that what they're getting here out of Michigan?
You should always be happy when you draft a Michigan player.
A Michigan man.
Mazi Smith is a freak of nature athlete and will plug up the hole. Another draft pick I did like for you guys, I know going to offense, but Luke Schoomaker.
Yeah.
He's not going to wow you athletic-wise, but at Michigan he was just everything right. He's a good possession tight end. I think he's going to fit in well for that offense.
Yeah, you know, it feels like they had a lot of conversations between Harbaugh and McCarthy leading up to this draft, very Michigan-laden draft, while the Eagles were drafting all the Georgia Bulldogs. So we'll find out how that works out. But I'm excited, not because, again, we're going to always talk about Pollard, talk about Dak, talk about the weapons, Zach Martin's holding out. But, you know, it's the defense that, to me, that's the point in this team that I go, I can hang my head every week knowing that Dan Quinn's going to get the best out of this unit, and they're going to be a really good unit if it takes time for Dak and the offense to gel. But I don't think it will take time.
No, I don't either. I mean, you look at this offensive line. We haven't even gotten to that. You got a healthy Tyron Smith. Zach Martin there at right guard. Zach Martin's going to Canton.
And we're
going to
get him paid. Well, everybody's worried about he's going to hold out. He's going to be there. I think it's a matter of time, and Jerry's going to go, yeah, you're going to Canton, to your point, Amal. I'm going to make sure my guy's happy and still wearing a Cowboy uniform in the process.
He's only been an All-Pro six straight years. By the way, this is so typical in baseball.
Ground ball
to second base to Chris Morrell. Game should have been over. Nolan Arenado was just kind of Cadillacing it down the line. Morrell boots it. It goes into the outfield. Next pitch, Wilson Contreras absolutely gets banged on the wrist, unfortunately. So now you've got the tying run at second base with two outs.
And by the way, the worst spot for Contreras to get hit, and former Cub, you know all about that. But in real time here, as we take a look, everything does hang in the balance. The total, the side, everything, 4-3 here in the ninth. And it's as routine a play at second base. I played second base. I'm not as young as I used to. I could have made it a play. I mean, just get the glove down, kid.
Not only get the glove down, how about just get the body behind it? You still would have been able to make the play. By the way, I don't even know if Contreras would be able to stay in the game in this one. But you know, getting back to Dallas here real quick, Dave, to me, I just don't understand why this team is sitting at 9.5 wins. First of all, 9.5 to the over at -165 at DraftKings. The number should be 10.5, in my opinion.
Totally agree. That's why I think the alt market there that you can play at a 10.5 at plus money for the Cowboys is a good play. Because, again, you can't predict injuries. We understand that. If their core stays healthy, and Dak now a full year removed, and Michael Gallup a full year removed from that ACL, and the offensive line has gotten better, and I think now you look at Smith a year ago, and you go, boy, the Joneses really nailed that draft as well 2 years ago. If they nailed the Michigan draft, if you will, this year, Cowboys going to be right there. Hey, I'm not going to shy away from this team possibly coming out of the NFC. And I know it's been since 95 since we've seen that. But in the conference, I just look at it and I go, who really scares you behind? We understand why San Francisco and Philadelphia are the one and twos. But Dallas is the three. And tell me, who, if it's not Dallas, who would be the third best team in the NFC?
So I want to get your take on this. I mentioned this the other day. For me, right now in the NFC, Philly and San Francisco give a slight edge to Philadelphia because of the quarterback position. But for me, it's not that much.
Yep.
And then Dallas, a little bit of separation between Philly and San Francisco and Dallas. And then a precipitous drop-off from everybody else behind them. And I know everybody loves Seattle. Okay, let's just break down. Receiving core, you got to go slightly to Dallas. Brandon Cooks gets 1,000 yards every year. I don't know what this guy does. I don't know if he gets into fights with his teammates, if he sleeps with his teammates.
Well-traveled.
How is this guy traded every year?
He's the NFL version of Kenny Lofton. Well, great player, but gets traded every – he's like the guy you could trade all the time.
Kenny Lofton had a nice stay
in Dallas. Yeah, I felt like
in
he Dallas, stayed in Cleveland with the former Indians for a while. But then he became well-traveled at the end, right? But, look, I'm with you guys on Brandon Cooks. Like, initially I went, well, is this a guy you really want on the team? Then I hear the way the guys have reacted and the difference he can make in the slot for the Gallups of the world and CeeDee Lambs. Then it makes a lot of sense. I think they're going to be okay, even though Dalton Schultz has gone at tight end position. We mentioned the rookie out of Michigan. And I think they have other guys that they've drafted well in that position, typically, that they didn't want to spend the money on Schultz. That's why they let him go. So I'm really okay. Yes, Tony Pollard, gruesome injury against San Francisco. Do they bring back Zeke at a very low rate to possibly help out?
That'd be great for them.
That could absolutely be there. So I don't see a whole lot of weaknesses in this team. I think this is easily a double-digit win team, and I do think they're in play right now to possibly one of those sneaky teams at double digits to win the NFC.
I get people have an affinity for Detroit, Minnesota. Excuse me, had a great year last year, but still, the Vikings take a step back. You look at Detroit. Maybe. We'll see, but they're not better than Dallas.
Totally agree. When we come back, let's look at the rest of the NFC East and see what the competition is besides Fly Eagles Fly in the City of Brotherly Shove. Come on! come back. It is Sharp Money here on VSiN.